Colebrook Road has a new album, On Time. It's on Mountain Fever Records. The entire band, Colebrook Road, is going to be my guest. All of them around one microphone. It's a lot of fun. Colebrook Road. I'm really happy to welcome to Unreal Bluegrass the entire band of Colebrook Road. And what I want you to do now, guys, since we're all sitting around, I'm sitting around my mic, you're sitting around the mic on that end, just for the initial go-around, let's identify, take a second, don't just, it's not the Mickey Mouse Club, you don't have to say, you know, I'm Cubby or whatever, tell everybody what your name is and what you do in the band, and then we'll bring it back around to the new album, On Time, which is on Mountain Fever Records. So just take a second and go around the room, I don't care how you do it, but say your name and maybe what you play and stuff like that.
Sure, this is Wade Yankee, I play mandolin in the band.
I'm Jeff Campbell. I play upright bass and sing tenor vocals.
Mark Grass. I play banjo, a little bit of dobro, and sing baritone and bass vocals.
Joe McAnulty. I play the fiddle and sing baritone vocals.
And Jesse Eisenbeis. I sing the lead vocals, pick the guitar, and do a lot of the songwriting.
Jesse, I'm glad you mentioned that because of the 10 songs, am I counting correctly? 7. Several are from your publishing company, but it looks like you participate in writing at least 7 of the tunes. We have a Paul Simon tune. We have a couple other names I don't recognize, but is that about accurate?
Yeah, that's right. And a couple names you don't recognize are close friends of ours. So.
Well, good. I figured they were. And I want to give them credit when it comes time to do that. I will tell the listeners that Colebrook Road is a band that I became familiar with last year at Grey Fox Bluegrass Festival. So that would be 2018. And I was talking to Wade the other day. We were setting this up, and I said, you guys were everywhere last year, and I really enjoyed the shows, and I saw you on the lower levels and the higher levels. And, Wade, you had a reaction to me that explained why you were so omnipresent at Grey Fox, that you actually might have filled in for some – you did more duty than maybe than you thought when you headed up there.
Yeah, that's right. We were on an emerging artist last year, so we were slated to play 2 sets – on Friday, I believe.
Yeah.
And then we got offered a 3rd set to play Friday as well in the Sierra Nevada beer tent. So we were certainly everywhere that day. And then we wound it down for the day and woke up to somebody driving a golf cart into our campsite asking if it was Colebrook Road and thinking maybe we did something wrong. And it turned out that our...
Normally the first response is, no, we don't know who you're talking about, and then leave. But it wasn't us. But so anyway, go ahead.
Turned out that the boys in Rapidgrass, I believe, missed their flight or got held up in the airport for some reason. So we actually ended up playing on Saturday as well up in the tent up on the upper level there.
Well, yeah, it seemed like you were everywhere. Let me ask you this, and we'll talk about the new album as much as you want. And I do want to touch on it. It's a wonderful album, and I've had it in play for a while. It's On Time with Colebrook Road. Was that your first experience at Grey Fox?
Yes.
Okay.
As a band.
I was going to ask you that, too, because a lot of people's first experience at Grey Fox isn't necessarily as a band unit, but they're there and doing other things or participating in other things. Is that pretty much accurate for everybody else in the band?
Well, this is Mark, the banjo player, and I've actually been going to Grey Fox for 20-plus years, maybe longer. Took my kids there when they were little, so
okay.
This is my first experience on stage at Grey Fox, which is pretty amazing.
By the way, Mark has the best jacket of the band. I was proud of you, Mark, as a banjo player. On stage, he's got it's black. I'm just from my memory. It's just a nice touch to be on stage with. Not that you're showing off, but I think banjo players need to stand out more because we don't get enough attention.
Yeah, you can't hear him.
All right. Am I correct that the band is more regionally located to the Northeast and maybe closer to Mark? It must be for you to take your kids to Grey Fox. Am I correct that the band is more likely to be found playing or performing in the Northeast part of the country?
That was the MO for a long time. We've been over the last year really trying to expand that out, and this year too we're getting out to the Midwest and the Colorado and then the Pacific Northwest late in the summer. But yeah, as a Pennsylvania band, we stretched our legs in D.C. and Baltimore and Pittsburgh and just travel around PA a whole bunch.
I kind of have that feeling. It's not a knock at all. It's just that I'm always amazed. And Mark, my experience is nothing like yours at Grey Fox, maybe 7 years. I don't remember exactly. I'm always amazed at the incredible bands, and Colebrook Road being one of those, that seems to come out of the northeast quadrant of the United States. Just bands that are top flight, on par with any that do national tours and have national exposures. And you were one of the bands last year that I kept thinking, I bet they're local because I've never heard. I live in the Cincinnati area, south of Cincinnati in Kentucky, but I hadn't heard of you until last year.
That's true. And really, we didn't get too far outside of the Mid-Atlantic much until last year, up in the New England some, but mostly here in the Northeast. And, of course, our first couple releases were self-released records, so they didn't get the traction that the new record did either.
It's kind of funny to say that, Steve, about the Northeast, because recently Mountain Fever shared something that we were doing with all their followers, and they said, not too shabby for a bunch of boys from North Mason-Dixon line.
Listen, I don't know what it is, but I've lived my whole life in Kentucky, and I can tell you this, and I've said this before on the air, there is nothing like the number and quality of bands where I live than compared to the Northeast. Come out of everywhere, and they're all high caliber. They aren't all. I used to kind of make this discernment between, are they Berklee College influenced or not? There's a whole other branch of that that's worth discussing. But I just also think in the old time and bluegrass, there's so much in the Northeast, and there's so much of a history with New York City, if we want to focus on that. But it just seems to be everywhere, and there's so many great bands. Like every year at Grey Fox, I see more and more that I figure out or learn that where they're from. But I do think Colebrook Road is right in that wheelhouse of what I'm talking about, of great bands, regional bands that need more exposure and are going to get it.
Thank you. And I think you'll find that you'll run into a couple more new Northeast bands at Grey Fox this year that you'll be pleasantly surprised by.
Always. I hope so. It always works that way. They have such great taste, and they're always expanding what everybody can listen to. Let's talk a little bit about the band. Mark, you've been taking your kids to Grey Fox for 20-plus years, and you've been going. But Colebrook Road, let's talk about how long they've been in existence up in the Northeast.
Sure. I guess we got started in 2009, Jesse and myself. This is Wade. And then we played with a different lineup for a couple of years, and Joe and Jeff joined the band in 2011, and we've been playing with them ever since. And so Mark joined the band in 2015, so we've got this lineup now 4-plus years, but the band's been around for basically a decade now already.
Go ahead, say again.
I just said in some form we've been around for 10 years.
At least a decade, okay. You're on stage. You know, one thing about Grey Fox for me is there's so many different stages. You guys know this too, and some of you much more than I, but one of the things I look at is not only the quality of the music and the performance, but the stage presence. And one of the reasons I kept following Colebrook around, I didn't always introduce myself, is that you have a great stage presence. It's a very professional, and you guys know what you're doing from tune to tune. Colebrook Road isn't lost on stage. It's very well orchestrated. You know what I'm saying? It's not like you get up and say, what?
Yeah.
You step back, and I always wanted to have a band and call it the Kiwis, because the guys we were in, we would always step back and say, what key we in now? Well, you guys know that. little bird from New Zealand, that wanted to be. I had it all planned out, what key we in. But you guys actually, you run the great show, and you obviously have a lot of experience in live performances.
Well, thank you. Thanks. We do spend a fair amount of time making that work, so we appreciate that.
I mean, it's important, I think, to the audience to know that the band is ready. I mean, you want to go as an audience member. You're going to be entertained, and you're going to a show, and this is all just my personal opinion. You don't want to go and think that you're watching the band figure it out as you go. You want to be entertained. You don't want to, and you guys do it very well, and it's all planned out well. So the On Time album, which I have in my hands, has been playing for weeks, when did the idea germinate, and when did you start working on what the release is called, On Time?
You mean the song in particular? Or
No. Let's start with the album. There is the song On Time, which is the first cut. But, yeah, the album, when did the idea for the album come about, and how long did you work on it?
Well, I mean, we released the album in 16 called Halfway Between, and ever since we were finished with that, I think we just started putting the catalog of tunes together slowly and playing them out and working on them until eventually we had, you know, 10, 12, 13 new songs. That's when the label approached us, and we had basically at that point had most of them already together and arranged and worked out. So probably over the last 2 or 3 years.
Okay, good. So when you said when the label Mountain Fever approached you, is that how it works? I mean, if you're out there, you're performing and you have a fan base, I'd have to ask Mountain Fever, but why did they approach you? What was the contact, or how does that work? Or I don't want to pry into business I don't need to know about, but you were approached by a label, and the label is Mountain Fever. How did that come down?
Yeah, no, it was actually pretty funny the way it worked. We're also working with we work with Jim Rowe for booking.
Right.
And last year I was talking to Jim on the phone about something or other. He said, you know, I think you should give Mark Hodges at Mount Fever a call. I think that you all do a good fit down there. And I said, okay. And he gave me his phone number, and I called, and I left a message, and I didn't hear from him, and I kind of, you know, went about my business. And I talked to Jim about something else a few months later, and he said, did you ever call Mark Hodges? I said, yeah, I did. He said, well, I think you should call him. So I called Mark, and I talked to him one day, and he was in the Walmart in the grocery store. He's having a bad time with his tires or something. I don't know what it was. But he said, call me back tomorrow. I called him back, and I sent him some stuff after we got off the phone, and, you know, everything just seemed to click. Like they liked the band, and we liked their roster, and it seemed like we could all work together well, and it all came together pretty quick. So I mean, really, it was just somebody told me to make a phone call, and I did it, and that's what happened.
Well, that's how it happens a lot of times. And by the way, Mark does a good job keeping up with his artists, and also Mark is very good at dealing with, well, let's say people on my side of the microphone. Mark Hodges and Mountain Fever are very good at sending me early things and sending me notices and what's going on and making sure that I have everything that I need. So I think I applaud you for that choice. I always had great respect for the whole label, Mountain Fever.
Yeah, we've been so excited about the connection, just like you said, that they've had with radio and the airplay we've gotten, especially on Sirius and chart action that we've gotten. They have some great connections and promotion for that. It's been really cool.
Yeah, wonderful group.
I think so, and I've had lots of communications with Mark, and I think that what you're saying is accurate. The title cut from the album, On Time, is the first cut, and I put arrows. The first two cuts are fairly up-tempo. On Time is, Jesse, that's a song that, one of the songs that you wrote. That's kind of like everybody's going to work on Monday morning song initially. It could be anything, but I mean, I want you to break down some of these songs a little bit. We don't have to go through all of them, but let's talk about some of them while we have the opportunity.
Yeah, so On Time, I guess, I kind of had the idea for the riff. We were in a friend's basement down in Morgantown, West Virginia, and just played it for Wade. And while we were doing that, I think he reminded me and everybody else that was hanging around that, hey, we can't mess around with this too long because we have to get on stage here in a couple hours. We got a far drive. I forget where we were going, but it's kind of just about that, just the daily grind, not just of going to work and going to the grocery store and maintaining a house and a family and friends, but trying to do that and grow a bluegrass band at the same time. That song was just about releasing some of that tension out into the world.
Well, it does. No, it does. And then you're on time, and then you got to get in line on the very second song.
Yeah, exactly. You're on time, and then you got to get in line on the Pennsylvania Turnpike out to Philadelphia.
Now, so I will tell this to the listeners. I think the last cut on the song "Better Off Today" is kind of a. There's a lot of stuff in between here, but I think "Better Off Today" is kind of a resolution of those tensions that are created in the first two. As far as, you know, it's just kind of like, okay, we're better off now, and it's also an up tempo tune at the end. But I just kind of feel like, I don't know how you plan these things, whether you put the songs in certain order, but that's the way I hear it. It doesn't have to be correct. It's my own ears.
No, it's funny you mentioned that, because we've done a few radio interviews before with our last album, and it was the same thing. Like, we didn't necessarily put a ton of thought into the flow of those songs, but once somebody listens to it, they kind of tell you, well, this seems to tell a little bit of a story with these songs. That's kind of cool. I hadn't thought of that. I mean, that last song, Better Off Today, was a love song I wrote for my wife, but it is kind of a cool resolution with all that tension.
It is. It's a love song. There's a lot of great, like I said, there's the first two, I kind of have indications that they're more up-tempo. Better Off Today is also heading in that direction. Caged Bird is, I'm sorry, but Velvet, the third tune is, Caged Bird is the third tune. That's not quite as upbeat. Here's the point I'm making, and I really don't want to make you guys tell me what the songs mean. This is what I hear on some of these things, but the tempos and what you're doing with, on the third one, Caged Bird, anybody can just, it's another one of your songs, but anybody wants to talk a little bit about what the song and what the meaning is from the performers, the listeners can get what they want out of it.
Yeah, I mean, when I wrote that song, it was just kind of about the idea of, with the lyrics, things colliding, that spot where things meet each other, and I wanted to put some themes in there with social justice and, you know, Maya Angelou stuff, but you guys can talk about maybe why you were pretty excited about it once we started doing it, especially with tempos and arrangements and stuff.
Yeah, please, go ahead.
And, you know, it's a great key. It's always fun to keep playing, and, you know, the minor feel and the rhythm behind it, I think the kickoff and all that stuff, it's just kind of like, it's cool when these songs that Jesse brings to us, like, we know which ones, because we'll start arranging them right away. And they're like, oh, I hear this. And everybody, you know, puts in their little bit. And it's cool how a lot of them come together fairly easy after that, you know, the arrangement comes up. Better Off Today was the same way. But it was, I think, growing the songs after we arranged them and put them together, like getting to play that on the main stage at Grey Fox last year will always be ingrained in my head.
That's a big deal, man. Get that. I don't care how you got there. I don't care if somebody was sick or a golf cart drove into your area or not. Being on the main stage at Grey Fox, there are bands who go there for years and years and years and years and don't even accidentally get up there. So that's a huge deal.
Well, we get to be there on purpose this year, so
go ahead. I'm sorry.
It's funny you mentioned that. I mean, it was a really big deal, especially for me. It was just this amazing spiritual mountaintop moment. I mean, I will never forget that. One of the coolest hours of my life. And then, you know, the 3 or 4 days after, just trying to tell people about it. It was just, it's hard to describe what that was like for me.
Tell you what, it was hard. It was hard to go back to work.
That's right. Don't you realize I was on the main stage at Grey Fox? What do you mean I got to clock in? I mean,
I don't even know what I did.
How was your weekend? Better than yours.
The crowds at Grey Fox. I'm a piker compared to some of you guys, but I guess over 7 years, it's the most amazing festival. But I think the crowds are so into. I've been there before when bands that I knew of, but just barely, and the audience knows everything they're doing and sings everything they're doing. I'm thinking, how could they possibly know these things? They're just so hip, such a hip audience, I think.
Yeah.
I couldn't believe how many people were at some of those, like, 11 o'clock in the morning shows and, like, the side tents. Like, they were, like, bursting at the seams before lunchtime. Like, that's unheard of at a lot of these festivals.
I got the sense that there were a number of people that came to the festival to find new bands that they'd never heard of that were of high quality and were really interested in that.
That was the thing. Like, I thought we'd get there, you know, sneak in an early set. I'm like, well, no one will be at this set. You know, like, we'll just sneak in, get more comfortable for the second set. We show up. I'm like, no, everybody's coming to this. Oh, cool. Yeah.
Weather doesn't matter. I mean, I've been there when there was 4 inches of water. I've been there when it was 100 degrees, and it doesn't seem to stop anything that's going on. And I look out at the crowd. I'm sometimes on the high, on the big stage just looking out from behind the curtain. And I look out the crowd, I'm just amazed. It goes forever, and their energy is just, and their attention. When you play at Grey Fox, and you guys did, the audience isn't necessarily walking around or talking or ignoring you. They're very locked on to what they're seeing on stage.
Yeah. This is Mark. Yeah, I was going to say two things. One, with our process of doing the songs, like the Caged Bird, probably the most exciting thing is when Jesse brings us a new song and we start fooling around with it at practice. And the Caged Bird in particular, we just tried a few things, and it just all came together, really. Jesse talks about the collision of things, but it was almost like musically it was a collision of things that all fit. And that's really the exciting part of the arranging process. And then as far as Grey Fox goes, having gone there for many years, it's incredible how many great bands you see at the emerging artist stage. I mean, back when it was at the... I think it was still Winterhawk.
Yes.
But the Steep Canyon Rangers were the were on the emerging artist stage, and I was like, wow, these guys are really good.
These guys might have a shot. They might have a shot.
Yeah.
It is amazing how they pick talent like that, and Mary Daub, Mary Burdett, and everybody else involved in the selection, they really go out of their way to. They just have good taste, is what I always tell people. They have good taste, and they know what's good. On the album, you have we talk about a lot of these songs all day, but you chose a Paul Simon tune, a couple down from where I was, "The Boy in the Bubble," and I think that's interesting that a bluegrass band covers a Paul Simon tune. And how does that thought come about? And it's really neat. There's a nice video on YouTube which I was looking at the other day, and you make all your own sounds. In between the songs, I mean, it's all little sound effects. But how do you wind up with Paul Simon? Who brings? Let's put it this way: I'll make it easier for you. Who brings Paul Simon to the band?
I think this is Wade. I think that was my doing. Mm-hmm. I've been in love with that record, Graceland, for a very long time. I think as well as some of the other fellows in the band. But I kind of always wanted to do that tune. I remember fooling around with it on the guitar many, many years ago, and never really, you know. Do anything with it, but for some reason, doing Paul Simon songs has become a little bit in vogue in like the more progressive bluegrass circle.
It has.
There's quite a few cuts from Graceland that are out there in the world. Lonely Heartstring did one, mm-hmm. and Firestock Collective did one, and I think Old Salt Union has one.
Old Salt Union, there. You can call me Al. I think Paul Simon should do a bluegrass record.
I agree with you. I've been wanting to do that particular number for a while, and I feel like it was very similar to the arranging process we talked about with the rest of these songs. Like, I brought it in, and by the time Jesse knew the words, I feel like all the arrangement ideas fell into place real naturally. Some of them we borrowed from that live performance for the concert in South Africa. But,
right. Well,
It was just really natural to have that all kind of fall together.
Cool.
This is Jesse.
Yeah, go ahead, Jesse.
At the end, for the drum beat stuff and all that rhythm, Wade basically told everybody exactly what they were going to do to fill that out. And I told somebody that, and they said that's the exact same process. If you ever take an African drumming class, the instructor tells you what beat to play and goes around the room, and then everybody puts it together. So it was kind of authentic on that one, I guess.
I would assume that you're going to do that at Grey Fox.
You got to do that.
There's
a hard time not doing that at about every show.
Okay. There's one instrumental on the album, as I count, and I'll pronounce it. Is it Mabon?
Mabon.
I'm sorry. That's
I can't even say it. Sometimes.
All right. Listen, I'll go with Mabon, Joe. That's a tune that it looks like you wrote. Listen, Colebrook Road has, there are songs like Coralie, there are things that are the first two tunes and maybe even the last one that we talked about in Coralie. Coralie sounds like a name that was borrowed from a bluegrass history book. I mean, but it's a great new song. But so Colebrook Road does tunes that are instantly recognizable as being part of what anybody would think is bluegrass. I don't like people who limit the music, by the way. It's just not of interest to me. But then Velvet and things, and then you pull in Paul Simon and even this Mabon. There's some plays in there that are different. Talk about the only instrumental for just a second, if you wouldn't mind, Joe.
Yeah. I had worked on it over a couple months. Coming from a classical background, I always write melodies first and then have Wade try to decipher what chords go along with what I'm playing. So this time I really wanted to get an instrumental on the album. So it was kind of like the last hour before, it was the last tune that we got together. But I was writing it and I came up with the chord structure first and then recorded that very poorly on guitar for myself and then just noodled around until I found the melody, fits the melody that I wanted, and then the rest was taking it to the band. I played it for them, we got the chord progression down, and then we just spread it out and put a format down and went from there.
I did not mean to make light of Cora Lee, Jesse. Just the name sounds like something that Bill Monroe, but it's not at all. But I mean, it's, you know what I'm saying? The name is the, is an old.
Yeah, well, it's funny you say that because Hodges said the same thing. This one sounds like about 200 years old the first time we played it for him. But it's actually, it's named after my niece. That's her first name.
Oh, nice. Okay, good.
Yeah,
good.
He thinks it's pretty cool.
It's great. Hey, listen, you got a song name. If your uncle writes a song about you, that's perfect. It's and then it looks like the. And you're going to tell me about Mike Burkhalter, then, who on Evening Rain. Tell me who that is. I know you have friends that contributed to the albums we mentioned, to the songs on the album we mentioned. I did not mention. Let's see. Micah Simmons. I talked about Velvet. Let's talk about Micah Simmons first because I don't know him. Then I want to skip back down to. Evening Rain and talk about Mark.
Sure. So this is Jesse again. Micah is my first cousin, and he kind of taught me a lot about playing music. I was the first person I ever performed with on stage back before I knew anything about music, really. And we always used to play that song together, and I had just kind of re-remembered it a couple months before we were going to go cut the record, and I said, hey, you guys want to hear the song my cousin wrote, practice? And I played it, and they said, what did you guys say? Where has it been? Why did we wait so long to play this song? It's great. So,
Jesse, but this guy can really write a song.
It's just kind of about laying on a rock in the middle of a creek at night looking up at the stars. It was really cool this Easter that he took me to the spot, me and my wife, and we kind of waited out. It's really, really a cool thing. I just added on the last verse, the only part I added. And we've been doing it live. These guys worked up a pretty cool jam, so we've been kind of extending it lately. It's been a lot of fun, and he came and heard us play it, and he said he cried and was so excited about it. And yeah, so it was a good thing all around.
Great. Okay, so then let's go down to Mike. I'm pronouncing his name Mark. Mike Burkhalter.
Yeah, Burkhalter. Yeah,
Burkhalter. Yeah.
He's been a buddy of ours for a long time. He lives here in the area, and to be honest. Can't remember the very first time I met Mike. Maybe Jesse does. He remembers things better than I do.
High school.
Well, I didn't know in high school, but Jesse knew him in high school, apparently. I did not know. But Mike writes great songs that he's not big on taking them out and performing them. And we put one of them on our first record way back in 2012. We put a song called Colorado Kind of his on our first record. And he played this one for us a long time ago. And it's been floating around for a real long time. And this year, we finally made good on recording it.
The album is full of thank yous to a lot of people that we can't mention all of them, but you guys are very appreciative of everybody who lent a hand, support, or whatever involved. The inside of the album opens up, and the list just goes on forever. They may not appear on the album. Some are musicians, some are people that I know, but it looks like you're really thankful to the people that have helped you get to the point of releasing on time, and maybe this is the opportunity. I hope so. I hope it's the opportunity for more people to learn about Colebrook Road. I assume there's a website that has to look a lot like Colebrook Road if you type it in. Am I accurate on that?
Yep. Colebrookroad.com. We'll get you there.
I would be stunned if it were something different. I kind of guessed into that one. So people can find out where you're going to be. Can they order this on-time CD from that website?
Oh yeah. I guess not at this exact moment where
I don't want to talk about it.
Just having a little trouble with our website.
Okay, all right.
It should be back up on any time.
All right.
So you can get all of our CDs on there, and you can get the vinyl.
We got shirts, beverage koozies, and throwing a couple stickers if you buy it.
So. Nice. So
and of course our schedule.
Your schedule's there. What's the schedule look like for this summer for Colebrook Road?
How much time you got? We're pretty good. So after this local show, we have we're playing at a kind of 4th of July event locally, and then a couple more that are local. Very cool amphitheater in a town called Mount Gretna near here. And then after that, we're off to Grey Fox, picking on the plains in Colby, Kansas. Evergreen in Colorado.
That's all the same weekend, by the way.
Oh, yeah.
Really?
Well,
you're on the other side of the Mississippi. You might as well hit everything out there. It's all right nearby once you get that far.
Yeah.
That's right.
Well, we get off stage at Gray Fox, I think at 4:30, and then we have a 10:50 flight from LaGuardia. It gets into Denver at 1:20 a.m., and then we play in Colby, Kansas at noon on Saturday.
Oh, jeez.
So that's going to be a great story someday, but right now
it's life. It's life on the road. It's life on the road. That's all. And enjoy every minute
that's
of it.
That's right, yeah. Or in the air, as it were.
in the air. Listen, go ahead.
I was just gonna add to some schedule stuff. After that, I think we have some more. We have some Pennsylvania festivals, and then we're playing a show with Michael Cleveland and Flamekeeper down in Westchester near Philadelphia, and then we'll be in the Pacific Northwest over Labor Day for a week. We have a bunch of house concerts and Cascade Loop.
That's wild. Oh, that's great. It's good you can do a week out there because it's a long way away.
Yes, sir.
All right. Listen, I love this album On Time on Mountain Fever Records, Colebrook Road. I was so thrilled to see you last year. I did not know you as I saw you play all around Gray Fox. That was great. Now you're going to be back this year. And now you have this new album that whenever the website, it'll be fixed. You know, the website will be fixed before this airs. Put it that way. That's a little bit of pressure on your webmaster back there. It'll be up and running, and I'm real excited for it. I can't wait to see you guys again up at Gray Fox, and all the best to everyone in the band. And album is fantastic.
Oh, man. Thanks so much.
Thank you.
All right, now go.
We look forward to seeing you up there as well.
I'll say hi. Pack up your stuff. I know you're heading out to a show, and you made some time on a very busy day to do this. I appreciate it greatly.
Yeah, we do as well. Thank you so much for having us on.
All right. See you guys later, then.
We'll see you
there.
Bye-bye.